Good morning. So nice to see you all. This morning I'd like to explore together with you the four fasts, the Arbat Somot, in light of the miracle of the modern state of Israel. Following the return of the Jewish people to their ancestral homeland in the late 18th and early 19th centuries, and in the wake of the miraculous birth of the state of Israel, and following the dramatic reclamation of the Temple Mount and the unification of Jerusalem in 1967, a number of poskim discussed and debated the relevance of Tisha B'Av, the fast of Tisha B'Av, along with the other fasts that were instituted by Chazal to mourn the Churban Beit HaMikdash and the Churban Yerushalayim. And while the notion of somehow canceling Tisha B'Av along with the other fasts may sound shocking, right? This question was first asked some 2,500 years ago. Oh, right, okay. So as the Beit HaMikdash, as Bayit Sheni was being built, as the Beit HaMikdash was being rebuilt, the Jews of Bavel sent a message to the Kohanim and the Nevi'im here in Eretz Yisrael, asking them to inquire of Hashem. Here in source number one, this comes from Zechariah, Perek Zion. Zechariah chapter 7, take a look at Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. They sent a message to the Kohanim and to the Nevi'im to inquire of Hashem and to ask, Ha'ef keba chodesh ha-chamishi. Hinazer ka'asher asiti ze kama shanim. Should I continue to weep, to cry in the fifth month? The fifth month is what? The month of Av, right? Should I mourn on Tisha B'Av? Ki Nazir, right? Like the Nazir who abstains from certain physical pleasures. Should I abstain? Ki Nazir, should I abstain from pleasures like we do on Tisha B'Av, from worldly pleasures? As I've been doing for many years now. That was the question. Okay? And Zechariah answers in Perek Chet, in the 8th chapter, with a very famous nevuah. Okay? Ko amar Hashem, here it's in source number 3. Zechariah Perek Chet, Pasuk Yutet. Ko amar Hashem Tzvakot. Thus says Hashem, master of legions, Tzom ha-revi'i, v'tzom ha-chamishi, v'tzom ha-shvi'i, v'tzom ha-siri, yelevetu dal esason ul-simcha ul-moadim tovim. V'ayemet v'ashalom ehavu. The fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fifth month, the fast of the seventh month, and the fast of the tenth month shall all become occasions of joy and gladness, happy festivals for the house of Yehudah. They will be lebetu dal esason ul-simcha ul-moadim tovim. There will be holidays to be celebrated. And then the Navi adds, and we'll come back to this piece, but love, truth, and peace. V'emet v'ashalom ehavu. Okay, that's the famous nevuah of Zechariah. But the intent of his nevuah is unclear. When exactly will these dates be celebrated as days of joy and gladness? When exactly will they be transformed into festivals, into Yamim Tovim, into Moadim for the house of Yehudah? That's the question. It's unclear. He says, in the future, you know, these days will be transformed into festivals, into days of joy and gladness, Sason Simcha, Moadim Tovim. They'll become Yam Tovim. Yamim Tovim will separate, we'll celebrate them, right? We'll become Yantif. But when will that take place? That's the question. Yes. This is the answer. In other words, the Jews of Bavel send a question, that's in Perek Zion, and the answer is in Perek Chet. But the answer is unclear. When? What does it depend on? Okay, so that's for the Gemara to interpret. Okay. That's for our Chazal to explain. We'll take a look in a moment at how Chazal interpret. What does it mean that these days are going to be transformed? And what's the criteria? What needs to happen before these days will be transformed into festivals and celebrated? Okay? But it's also interesting, and the Gemara is going to ask this question. Chazal read the Tanakh very carefully, very critically, and they point out, it's interesting, that on the one hand, Zechariah says that these days will be transformed into festivals, but on the other hand, he calls them fasts. Right? He says, the fast of the fourth, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh. So the Gemara is going to ask the question, wait a minute. On the one hand, he says they're going to become festivals, but he's still calling them fasts. Okay? Interesting. So let's look at source number four. This is the Mishnah and Gemara on Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Chet, very famous passage. Now, the Mishnah there in Rosh Hashanah, and this is really the point of departure for our discussion, Mishnah is interested in when the Beit Din in Yerushalayim is going to send shluchim, going to send messengers to other places in Eretz Yisrael in order to inform them when Rosh Chodesh was, okay? Different times during the year, months that have festivals within them, or maybe even months that have fasts. So the Mishnah begins here, source number four. Al shisha chodeshim hashluchim yotzim. 6 times during the year, 6 months, the messengers go out to inform the Jewish people throughout Eretz Yisrael exactly which day was established as Rosh Chodesh, because that, of course, informs when the holiday will fall out. You need to know when Rosh Chodesh was proclaimed. Did the previous month have 29 days? Did it have 30 days? Right? That tells you when you have to eat matzah on Pesach, and when you can't eat chametz, of course. So al Nisan b'pnei ha-Pesach, so they would send messengers out Rosh Chodesh and Nisan to inform people when Pesach begins. Al Av b'pnei ha-Ta'anit, at the beginning of the month of Av, Rosh Chodesh Av, right, which is this Shabbat, in order to inform the people about the fast. What fast are we talking about? Tisha B'Av, of course. Al Elul b'pnei Rosh Hashanah, beginning of Elul for Rosh Hashanah. Al Tishrei b'pnei Takanat Moadot, you got to know about the other festivals, right, in the month of Tishrei. The holiday of Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Chodesh itself, right, of course. And so there's a lot to say, but that's beyond the scope of our class this morning. Al Kislev b'pnei Chanukah, they would send out messengers at the beginning of Kislev because of Chanukah. The Al Adar mibnei Purim, and in Adar because of Purim, Kishya Beit Hamikdash Kayam Yotzin Af Al Iyar mibnei Pesach Katan, and they would send out when there was a Beit Hamikdash, they would send out messengers at the beginning of Iyar to inform people about Pesach Sheni, those who were not able to bring their Korban Pesach either because they were too far away from the Beit Hamikdash, or they were impure, etc. So the Gemara asks an interesting question. The Gemara notices the absence of the other fasts. In other words, the Mishnah says, well, we have to send messengers at the beginning of Av to inform the people when Tisha B'Av is to be observed. But what about the other fasts? Right? The other three fasts. Why don't we send messengers at the beginning of Tammuz for the fast of the 17th of Tammuz? Right? Or Tevet, for instance. So that's the Gemara's question. If you take a look here at the Gemara in source number four, the Gemara asks, "Vilipku nami at Tammuz v'Tevet." They should also send messengers at the beginning of Tammuz and Tevet, just like they send messengers at the beginning of Av to inform the people about the Tisha B'Av. Oh, so no, the Amar Rav Chana Bar Bizna, Amar Rabbi Shimon Chasida. Rav Chana Bar Bizna said in the name of Rabbi Shimon Chasida, "My dichtiv." He's going to darshan that pasuk that we just saw, the pasuk from Zechariah Perek Chet. What does the pasuk mean when it says, "Kol Amar Hashem Tzvakot Tzom Revi, Vitzom Hamishi, Vitzom Hashvi, Vitzom Asiri, Yeh Levet Yudal Sasonu Simcha"? Right? What does that mean? So, Rav Chana Bar Bizna says in the name of Rav Shimon Chasid, it's interesting. The prophet calls these days both fasts and festivals, as we mentioned. Kari lehu tzom, v'kari lehu sason v'simcha. The prophet calls those days both days of fasting and days of celebrating. Right? So it is very murpal, very ambiguous. Which one is it? That's the fundamental question. Now, the Rishonim here point out that the pasuk could have been formulated as the days that were observed as fasts on or in the fourth month, and in the fifth month, and in the seventh month, and in the tenth month. In other words, the pasuk could have been formulated slightly differently. He could have said, you know, the days that were once fasts now will be transformed. But the Gemara is sensitive and reading the pasuk very critically. The fact that the pasuk is formulated as such that the Navi calls them both fasts and feasts in the same breath, that's there to teach us something. And what's that? What's there to learn? What is this pasuk teaching us? What's it instructing us? Bizman sheyesh shalom yilas asonul simcha. Ein shalom tzom. Right? They're called both fasts and feasts or festivals in the same breath. That's there to teach when there is peace. Yes, those same days will be days of rejoicing, days of celebration. But when there is no peace, tzom. Now, how do we define peace? Major machloket. Major machloket harishonim, how we define peace and what's the criteria for these fasts. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa said, no, hachika amar. This is what it means to say. This is what the verse is telling us. Bizman sheyesh shalom, yu l'sason l'simcha. When there is shalom, when there's peace, oh, these days are going to be days of rejoicing and celebrating. Yesh shmad. When there is persecution, religious persecution, tzom. These days will be days of fasts, and that's why they're called fast days in this prophecy of Zechariah. Ein shmad ve'ein shalom. Okay, and so now Rav Papa introduces this third category. When there's not shmad, right, when there's no religious persecution, but there's also no peace, ratzu mitanin, ratzu ein mitanin. Those who want to fast may fast. Those who do not want to fast do not have to. In other words, the fast becomes optional. Okay? And again, we have to define what do we mean? What are these terms? How do we define peace for in this context or for this purpose? And how do we define shma in this context? Religious persecution. So the Gemara hasn't addressed Tisha B'Av yet, because remember, the Gemara's question is, well, they send messengers for Tisha B'Av, right? Why don't they send messengers at the beginning of Tammuz and Tevet, which also have within them fasts? And then the Gemara goes on and addresses your question. The next line of the Gemara. The Gemara says, well, if so, right? If it's all dependent on, let's say, the current situation, is there peace? Is there religious persecution? Ihachi Tisha B'Av Nami. You could ask, well, Tisha B'Av also should be optional when there's no persecution, when there's peace and no when there's no persecution, but there's also no peace, but Tisha B'Av should also be optional like the other fasts. So the Gemara says, Ihachi Tisha B'Av Nami. Amar Rav Papa Shani Tisha B'Av. Rav Papa explains, no. Rav Papa qualifies his statement. He made his statement with regards to the other three fasts, that when we're in this kind of quasi situation where there's no religious persecution, there's no Shema, but there's also no peace. Again, we have to define, what does this peace mean, right? So then you might say, well, maybe Tisha B'Av also should be optional. No. He says Tisha B'Av is different. Shani Tisha B'Av ho'il v'huchpilu bot sarot. Tisha B'Av is different. You know why? Because so many tragedies happened on Tisha B'Av. Many different things. You know, in fact, the Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit makes a calculation how we know that the first temple was destroyed on the 9th of Av. And it brings verses. And then it asks, well, how do we know the second temple was destroyed on the 9th of Av? And the Gemara's answer is incredible. It says, it could not have happened on any other day. In other words, this is a day that has been assigned for tragedies throughout Jewish history. And so the Gemara says, because many things happened on this day, Tisha B'Av is not in the same category. Tisha B'Av is not optional. Hoil v'huchpulu botzarot. The Amar Mar, as the Master said, b'tisha ba'av charav beit habayit barishona. As the Mishnah says, the end of Tanit, that on Tisha B'Av we had five tragedies. The Gemara here just mentions a few of them, but the first temple was destroyed. Uvashnia, the second temple was destroyed. Vinilkada Beitar, the city of Beitar was captured. Vinechrasha Ha'ir, and the city of Jerusalem was plowed under. Okay, so because many things, many tragedies happened on Tisha B'Av, we know throughout Jewish history, much later, all sorts of tragedies befell the Jewish people, and it's our national day of mourning. We've spoken about this in the past, when we've spoken about Yom HaShoah, for instance, and those who believe that Yom HaShoah should be observed on Tisha B'Av itself, as opposed to getting its own day, because Tisha B'Av is our national day of mourning. So the Gemara here is explaining why Tisha B'Av is different. Okay, but again, this Gemara too, just like the prophecy of Zechariah, is vague, is ambiguous. How do we define peace? And then, of course, Rav Papa makes things more difficult by introducing this concept of shmad, of religious persecution. So, what does peace mean? Meaning, wouldn't the opposite of peace be religious persecution? So how can you have a situation where there's no religious persecution, but there's also no peace? What does peace mean in this context? Okay, that's the question. Yes. Okay, so very good. We'll address that in a moment. So the Rashba here, I put on source number 6. The Rashba writes, Perush bizman sheyesh shalom, sheyisrael shruyin al admatan. What does it mean, shalom? It's when the Jewish people are dwelling on their land. And as many explain the intent of the Rashba, it means a time when the Jewish people have sovereignty over their land. So according to the Rashba, with the Jewish people having returned to their land today and over the last century and a half, and with Jewish sovereignty over the state of Israel today, and in the absence of any governmental decree persecuting the Jewish people, right? There's no shmad. Although, I don't know, maybe certain communities would look at the current political situation and call it shmad. But let's just interpret it a little more liberally. There's no shmad, and there is shalom, maybe. According to the Rashba, shalom means that we're living here, right? And that we have sovereignty over our land, so we would meet the Talmud's criteria of transforming our fasts into festivals and celebrating them as festivals. However, according to most Rishonim, here I put Rashi here in source number 5, Rashi assumes that we're talking about Bizman Hazesh She'ein Beit Hamikdash Kayam, and that he defines Shalom as She'ein Yad HaGoyim Tkif Al Yisrael. According to Rashi, a time when the fasts will be transformed into festivals and the fasts no longer need to be observed. That word shalom implies for Rashi there's a Beit HaMikdash standing. Okay, there's a whole discussion as to how to read the Mishnah. What time period is the Mishnah talking about? And the Mishnah, of course, is composed after Churban Bayit Sheni, where it's edited after Churban Bayit Sheni, put together by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, following the destruction of the Second Temple, long after the Second Temple was destroyed already in the second century, you know, a century later. But there's all discussion as to how to read the Mishnah and what the intent of the Mishnah is. But in any case, Rashi assumes, like many Rishonim, that you need a Beit HaMikdash before you can transform our fasts into feasts. Okay? And it's not just Rashi, it's Rabbeinu Chananel and the Ramban and the Ritva and the Tashbeitz. They explain a time of shalom, a time of peace, as to when the Holy Temple is standing. And without a Beit HaMikdash, there is no peace. Okay? And if you take a look here, Rabbeinu Chananel, where I've underlined in source number 7, how does he define Shei Shalom? Klomar, kol zman shebeit HaMikdash kayam, yel sason l'simcha. You know what real peace is? Peace is when you have a holy temple. Because again, Rav Papa introduced this idea of shmad. So, you know, you have to define peace as something more than just the absence of persecution, or the absence of violence, because then why do you need the Shema, right? So for these Rishonim, as I said, the majority of Rishonim, Rashi, Tosfos, Rabbeinu Hananel, Ramban, Ritva, Tashbetz, and many others, Shalom implies that there is a Beit HaMikdash. However, nevertheless, we said when there is not Shalom, which these Rishonim interpret as not a Beit HaMikdash, when there is not Shalom, however, there is not Shmad, there's not a decree, what did the Gemara say? If you want to fast, you may fast. If you don't want to fast, you don't have to fast. It's optional. So even if you define Shalom as the Beit HaMikdash, but nevertheless, when there is not Shmad, according to Rav Papa, the fasts are optional. Okay. So that's the question. Now, there's a whole discussion in surrounding the Rambam. Just for the sake of time, I'll summarize it. The Rambam, in his Perush HaMishnah, here in source number 12, says something incredible. He records that during the Second Temple period, while Bayit Sheni was standing, they observed Tisha B'Av. The fast of Tisha B'Av was observed, and the other fasts were optional. You know, you can imagine, you have a Beis HaMikdash, and the Rambam writes in his Perush HaMishnah that they were fasting Tisha B'Av for the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, for the Chorban of the First Temple. I mean, that's very difficult to understand. So many struggle to make sense of this Rambam. By the way, I'll just mention that the Tashbetz believes that this is a scribal error that crept into the text of the Rambam, that the Rambam never actually said this or didn't mean this. The Tashbetz is convinced that, of course, they did not fast while the Beit HaMikdash was standing. How can you fast Tisha B'Av? That's the whole point. You're supposed to celebrate when you've got a Beit HaMikdash, right? So others who do take the Rambam at face value try to explain how, according to the Rambam, they would fast for Tisha B'Av and how these other fasts were observed voluntarily. These other fasts were optional while you know the Beit HaMikdash was standing. And so what they say is, there are different ways of looking at it. They say that maybe Shalom is maybe a broader concept than just having an edifice, a building, a Beis HaMikdash, but Shalom is much broader and it still had not yet been achieved. So one explanation could be the Greek and Roman occupation. Because remember, we saw that the Rashba defines Shalom as Jewish sovereignty. So it is possible that you have a situation where you have a Beis HaMikdash, but you don't have complete Jewish sovereignty. You have a Greek and Roman occupation. Oh, okay. Right. For a period of time. So there are other possible explanations why, according to the Rambam, Tisha B'Av was observed and the other fasts were optional during the Second Temple period. Some explain the spiritual state of the Second Temple was just a shadow of the first. We know there were many things that were missing. The Mishnah in Avot and the Gemara in Masechet Yoma and elsewhere describe how the Second Temple was mere but a shadow of the First Temple, okay? And right, so that could be what the Rambam is describing here. It's interesting that the Maharsha points out, and I think this you can relate this to the Rambam. The Maharsha says that if you take a look at that prophecy in Zechariah Perichet, what does Zechariah say? He says these fasts are going to be transformed into feasts, into festivals for the house of Yudah. And then how does he end his prophecy? V'ha'emet v'ashalom ehavu. Love, truth, and peace. So as the Maharsha explains, the prophecy of joy and gladness, right, is predicated on truth and peace. So maybe even in the presence of a holy temple, if there is not real truth and peace, we go back to fasting. And maybe that's why it was optional, because of the spiritual state of the Second Temple and the Jewish people. We know that the Second Temple period was one of much corruption and strife and baseless hatred, Sinat Chinam, of course, that's why the second temple was destroyed. But there was a lot of corruption among the Kohanim themselves from many accounts in Chazal. And so that could also explain why, according to the Rambam, Tisha B'Av was observed and the other fasts were also observed by some. Okay? And Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the father of Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the Rav quoted his father of Moshe as saying, if you take a look at the Rambam himself, the Rambam includes the entire prophecy of Zechariah there in his Perush HaMishnah, including those last three words, V'ha'emet, V'ha'shalom Ehavu. Now you could say, okay, those words appear in the Navi, they're part of the Nivuah, but why does the Rambam have to bring those words down? The Rambam's writing a work of Jewish law. Why does he have to paskin? Why does he have to cite those words? So according to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, oh, this is precisely why the Rambam himself includes the end of the verse. Love, truth, and peace, because in the absence of truth and peace, even with a Beit HaMikdash standing, Tisha B'Av and the other fasts are relevant. Okay, so it would seem that the Rav Moshe Soloveitchik believes the Rambam paskins like the Maharsha, explains the Gemara, explains the Nevuah there. Okay, so, but it would appear, and someone mentioned this already, that the observance of these fasts are somewhat subject to a changing reality. In other words, okay, you may not have a Beis HaMikdash, and we assume that's how we paskin, you need a Beis HaMikdash, but what if there's no Shmad? What if there's no religious persecution? We said that then these fasts become optional, right? Som Gedalia and Asar B'Teves and Shavasar B'Tamuz, these fasts should be optional today, maybe, right? And it's interesting, historically, you had a number of Gaonim and Rishonim who ruled that the period that they lived in, since it was neither one of peace, because there was no Beis HaMikdash, but it was still not decree. There wasn't a Gzeiras HaShmad against the Jewish nation. The minor fasts, at least the three minor fasts, are optional. And these are Gaonim and Rishonim living outside of Eretz Yisrael. You know, they're living in Spain, they're living in Bavel, they're living in Europe, different places in Europe, and they're seeing just the changing reality. And again, if there's no Shalom, but at the same time, there's no Gzeiras Shmad, as the Gemara tells us, at least the three minor fasts, are optional. And in fact, if you take a look at the Gemara here in source number 15, this is fascinating. The Gemara in Megillah on Daf Hei describes how Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi bathed on the market day in Tzipori in a very public way, right? V'rachatz b'krona shel Tzipori, as if to announce to everyone that you're allowed to bathe b'shiva sar b'tamuz on the 17th of Tamuz, u'bikesh la'akor Tisha B'Av, and he wanted to uproot, he wanted to get rid of Tisha B'Av, v'lo hudulo, but the sages did not allow him. Now the Gemara explains, what does it mean that he wanted to uproot Tisha B'Av? He didn't want to get rid of Tisha B'Av completely. It wasn't like he was trying to uproot Tisha B'Av completely, right? Rather, it was Tisha B'Av that fell out on Shabbat, as can happen. And we know that when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbat, when do we observe Tisha B'Av? On Sunday, Saturday and on Sunday, on the 10th of Av, yes. So what was he trying to do? He was not saying, the Gemara explains, he was not saying, let's get rid of Tisha B'Av completely. What he was saying was, since Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos and we push it off already to Sunday, ho'il v'nidche yidche, once it is being pushed off to Sunday, let's push it off completely. Once it's not being observed on the day it's supposed to, so we have this latitude, this liberty, we could take liberties maybe and push it off completely. And that's what the sages did not allow him. But what's interesting is you see that he bathed in a public way. The Gemara says in the marketplace, on the market day, he bathed in a public way. He went to the public bathhouse on the 17th of Tammuz, okay? And he wanted to push off Tisha B'Av, although they didn't let him. Again, he didn't want to push it off completely, but once it was already pushed off, he felt that we could take certain liberties. Very interesting, both the Vilna Gaon and Rav Yaakov Emden explain Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's behavior in light of the period in which he lived. When did he live? He lived the second century. The Bayit Sheni, the second temple, was already destroyed, and the Romans were occupying the land of Israel, but yet it was a piece of it was a period of peace and prosperity, as the Gemara in a number of places describe. And that's expressed by his relationship with Antoninus, which the Gemara describes in Avodah Zarah and elsewhere. And so for Yaakov Emden and the Vilna Gaon, what's being described here is significant. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's acting in light of the current situation. On the one hand, there's no Beis HaMikdash, but on the other hand, there's no Gzeirat Shmad, even with the Roman occupation. He lived during a period of peace and prosperity. Tosfos there, however, points out that while this is source number 16, I'll just summarize for the sake of time. Tosfos points out that while Rebbe may have bathed on the 17th of Tammuz, the Gemara doesn't say he ate, right? In other words, the Gemara doesn't go that far. It doesn't say that the fast is optional. Why? And this is very important, because Tosfos assumes that by then, these minor fasts were already accepted by the Jewish people and no longer subjective, no longer object, no longer optional, okay? And in fact, you know, we saw how in the Gemara of Papa says, even in the absence of Shalom, which many define as a Beis HaMikdash, there's no Shalom, but there's also no Gzeiras HaShmad, there's no persecution, there's no decree against the Jewish people, so maybe the fasts are optional, at least the three minor fasts. What you see is that many Rishonim rule that once we accept the fasts upon ourselves, then they become obligatory. And if you take a look at the Ramban here, this is in his Torah Ta'adam, source number 8. At the bottom of the page, where I've underlined, "V'achshav kfar ratzu v'nagul nitanot b'hem v'kiblu maleihem." The minhag is that we've accepted upon ourselves to fast on these days. L'fichach asur liyachid lifrotz gadran. Therefore, it's prohibited for an individual to make a breach in the fence. The kol shekein b'dorot halalu. And now he relates to his contemporary situation, all the more so in this generation or in these generations. There is much religious persecution. There's much decree against the Jewish people, and there is no peace. And the Ramban, of course, is writing this when? In the 13th century Spain. Okay? You can imagine. Hilkach, therefore, chayavin hakol itanot midivrei kabbalah v'takanat nevim. Therefore, everyone is required to fast. It's been accepted already, midivrei Kabbalah, from what we've accepted, v'takanat hanavim, and the enactment of the prophets. In other words, the prophets made this enactment, and maybe at one point it was optional, but the Ramban says two things. Number one, over time we've accepted this upon ourselves as an obligation, as a chovah, and it's no longer optional, and no one has the right to make a breach in the fence. And number two, given our current political situation, or given the current security situation, these fasts are very relevant. There is indeed Gzeirat Shmad. That's what the Ramban believes. And many other Rishonim as well, Paskin like the Ramban, that we've accepted upon ourselves. And it sounds like that's the pshat of the Rambam here in source number 5, in number 9, excuse me, the Rambam in his Mishnah Torah, in Hilchot Taniot, the laws of fasts. The Rambam writes, Yesham Yamim Shekol Yisrael, mitanim bahem. There are days when all of Israel fasts, mipnei atzarot sheiru bahen, because of the tragedies that befell the Jewish people on these days, and then he goes on to include all the fasts. But he introduces it, these are days in which all of Israel fasts. So he does not present it as being optional. Okay? And again, in Halacha Hey, v'nagu kol Yisrael, bizmanim eilu litanot. The minhag is, the custom of all of Israel is to fast on these days. All. Okay? So that's what it would seem. And the Magid Mishnah points that out, that the Rambam, with his language, implies that today these fasts are obligatory. But what about today? What about our contemporary situation? You know, the Ramban and the Rambam are writing in the 12th and 13th centuries. The Rambam is a little older than the Ramban. Well, they're about contemporaries. The Rambam came a little before. But in any case, what would happen if the political landscape should change dramatically? Would these fasts, I'm talking about the three minor fasts, would they still be obligatory or would they be optional once again? You know, should something dramatic happen? Should the political landscape change dramatically? Something dramatic like the Hakamat HaMedina, the founding of the State of Israel. Now, it's interesting, even before the founding of the State of Israel, there was a sense that the nascent Jewish settlement, the Yishuv, was witness to the beginning of a process of redemption. And for some, the very appointment of Sir Herbert Samuel as High Commissioner of Pre-State Palestine was a sign that redemption was imminent. Okay, this is fascinating. I mean, after all, Herbert Samuel was the first Jew to govern the land of Israel in some 2,000 years. So there were rabbis, I'm sorry? He was an appointee of the British, but nevertheless, he was Jewish. Wait, by the way, we had that in the past. We had Jewish kings who were appointed by the Greeks or the Romans, right? That's not without precedent. But here you have a Jewish king, Ki'ilu. And in fact, some rabbis even accorded him status similar to the king of Israel. We'll see in a moment a letter, a fascinating letter from Rav Kook. I'll just mention that, you know, Rav Chaim Hirschenson, who was a fascinating rabbinic personality. I've mentioned him in the past here, lived from 1857 to 1935. He really, unfortunately, he had to run from Eretz Yisrael because of all the Kanaim, all the zealots who were against him. But he was a huge Talmud Chacham and very much interested in the idea of creating a modern democratic state here on our ancestral homeland and what that would look like. I mean, does it have to be a monarchy? Do you have to appoint a king, or can you hold elections? And he wrote a whole series of tshuvot called Malki Bakodesh. Interestingly, he wrote them when he was already in New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey, not far from where he was the rabbi. He was the chief rabbi of like all of Hudson County, Union City, Hoboken, Weehawken, Jersey City, that whole area there by the Lincoln and Holland tunnels, if any of you are from New Jersey. So if you take a look at his farm, it says, you know, he was the Rav of Union City and Jersey City and this whole area. Yeah, Jersey Heights, Union Hill, West Hoboken. He was the chief rabbi of that whole area in the very early 20th century when he left Israel. By the way, people don't realize he worked with Eliezer ben Yehuda at reviving the Jewish language. People think that, you know, modern Hebrew was like created by all these secular Zionists who are antagonistic to religion, and you can't speak modern Hebrew. It's, you know, it's imbued with you know, treif and all this stuff. And yeah, look what they did to Lashon HaKodesh, and it's not the Lashon HaKodesh. Eliezer ben Yehuda consulted with Rabbonim, among them Chaim Hirschenson. Okay, very interesting. And you know there's a lot of rabbinic Hebrew in modern Hebrew, of course. It's not anything new, but in any case, so Chaim Hirschman, fascinating personality. So he has in one of his Sfarim, in his Chidushim, he has a commentary to Masechet Horiot. And there, in the back of the commentary, there's some correspondence. There are letters that are published as an appendix, letters where different rabbis are asking the question, should Herbert Samuel be accorded status as the Melech B'Yisrael? You know that the Gemara in Horio talks about what if the king of Israel sins? He has to bring a special offering, a special korban that is brought by the king of Israel. So that's sort of the point of departure. They're discussing whether or not if Herbert Samuel sins, if he has to bring the special korban that a Melech B'Yisrael, okay. But, you know, this was a real discussion. There were leading poskim, leading rabbis at the time who We're looking at Herbert Samuel once he was appointed and asking, do we still celebrate Tisha B'Av? Here we have a Ki'ilu Melech B'Yisrael. And so I'll draw your attention to a fascinating letter here in source number 17. It's published in the fourth volume of the collected letters of Rav Kook, the Igrot HaRiyah. It's also published in a number of places. It was written to this Yaakov Tzvi Zisselman, who was a rabbi and a gabbai in Yafo, and the letter is also published in Zisselman's Sefer, Tiferet Yaakov, which was published in 1921 in Yafo. I saw it here in the Sifrei Lumit, the National Library. So he writes the following. First of all, look at source number 17. Look at how he dates the letter. He says, Bezrat Hashem Yom Yutet L'Chodesh Tammuz. This was just a few days, by the way, after Samuel had been appointed. He was appointed, I believe, on the 15th of Tammuz. So he's writing this in advance of Tisha B'Av. He's already been asked, should we observe Tisha B'Av? Hey, it's in 3 weeks from now. This is written on the 19th of Tammuz, Tafresh Pei.
Shana Rishona Lachinu Hanitziv Ha'Elyon Shel Eretz Yisrael, Mar Eliezer Ben Menachem, Sir Herbert Samuel, Yarum Hodo.
What is Rav Kook doing here by addressing this letter, by dating it the first year of the High Commissioner? He's dating his letter like a star would be dated with the year of the king. Incredible, right? Now, Rav Kook doesn't call him king, but what Rav Kook is saying, he calls him a high commissioner, Netziv Elyon. But Rav Kook is saying there is some significance here to the fact that he was appointed and he is Jewish. You're right, he was appointed by the British, okay? But that's a step in the process of redemption for Rav Kook. And Rav Kook writes the following. He saw it as an auspicious sign for the house of Israel and its revival, right? But nevertheless, he continued and said, quote, I'll just, for the sake of time, summarize. He writes, quote, however, as to the fast days, I think that until Hashem will establish our destroyed Beit HaMikdash before our very eyes on top of the high mountain as a glory in the eyes of all the nations, it is impossible for us to cancel them. So while Rav Kook saw the appointment of Samuel as something significant, and look how he dates his letter, it's incredible, right? The first year, similar to how you would date a shtar, a contract in the first year of the king of Israel, he recognizes that we're not there yet. We still don't have a Beit HaMikdash. So the fasts, even the three minor fasts, are still relevant. And so for Rav Kook, along with many contemporary poskim, the Holy Temple in Yerushalayim is a sine qua non for transforming our fasts into feasts, even the three minor fasts. Now, once again, this question would be asked following the miraculous birth of the state of Israel. And what's fascinating is there's an edition of Tchumen, very important Torah journal here in Israel, that's published by Machon Tzomet. So in the 18th volume of Tchumen, they have some important documents from the chief rabbinate's office that they published, documents that were never before seen by the public, that were found in the archives by my good friend and colleague and neighbor, Rav Shmuel Katz of Har Nof, who's the Rav Beit Sefer at the school that my son Ben Sion goes to, right? You know Rav Katz? Yeah. So Rav Katz has done a lot of research on the history and published extensively on the history of the chief rabbinate, who just last year celebrated 100 years, 100th anniversary. Because of Corona, they didn't do too much, but unfortunately. But Rav Katz, he publishes there in the 18th volume of Tchumen a number of documents. And among them, very interesting, he publishes telegrams that were sent from the Jewish communities in Istanbul, Turkey, and in Constantine, Algeria, following the Hakamat HaMedina, following the declaration of the state of Israel, the founding of the state of Israel, to the chief rabbinate, asking whether they should fast on Tisha B'Av, right? You think you only have a few months between Yom HaTzmaut and Tisha B'Av. You got to know, wait a minute, now we have a state. What do you do? So these telegrams are there. You could see a facsimile of the actual telegram and Rav Herzog's response, where he says very clearly, the chief rabbi at the time was Rav Yitzchak Alevi Herzog, of course, whose grandson is the new president of Israel, right? The current president of Israel. Oh, he begins his term today. That's right, Shekach, okay. He begins his term today. So here we're mentioning his grandfather. Anyone, if you speak to Buzhi Herzog today, you wish him a mazel tov, you can let him know we mentioned his grandfather in the shir. So Rav Herzog responds in a telegram that's also printed right there. You could see the original telegram or a facsimile of it. He writes clearly, the fast of Tisha B'Av, which was founded and based on the destruction of the Churban HaBayit, is not nullified, it's not batel, nor it or any of the other fasts. Okay, but in the wake of the dramatic events of June 1967, the question would surface once again. What do you do? And so take a look here at source number 18. This is a nice tshuva from Aselecha Rav, which are the tshuvot of Rav Chaim David Halevi, who was a chief rabbi first in Rishon LeZion, later became the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, a very important dayan, very important judge, and a very important posek who related to a lot of these modern questions of religion and state. And what do you do now that you've returned to your land and you built a state? And how do you reconcile that with many of these halachot? So he has a lot of very important tshuvot on the topic. So
he writes the following. If you take a look at the second section here, okay, the second little passage, the last line in the second passage, he writes the following. Ki av shezachinu Hashem limei reishit tzmichat gulatenu ba'atzmut midinit. Even though, you know, Baruch Hashem, we're zoche to the first flowering of redemption with our political independence, halo barur she'ein zo sof gulat Yisrael. Is it not clear that this is not the final redemption for the people of Israel? I skipped the line. Until we have the coming of the Messiah and the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Adarabah, he writes, just the opposite. Dafka ata, just now. Dafka now, right now. Kishekavashnu at Harabayit kibush tzva'i, ubecholzot minuim anu, bibechinat halacha likanes al makom hakadosh, ulavod bo, et avodat hakodesh. Even though, you know, we announced Harabayit biyadenu, and we have let's call it we've conquered the Temple Mount through a military victory, but nevertheless, the halacha prohibits us from entering the holy place and performing the holy service there. The kol shekein birotenu shadayin sholim mehalchim bo. He invokes the pasuk in Eicha, sholim hilchu bo. You know, we see that there are foxes that trespass on it. Okay? Matam lachshov al bitul hatsom. How can we even think about nullifying Tisha B'Av? And that was really the consensus among most poskim, that on the one hand, yes, we've come so far, but nevertheless, we're still very far away from where we need to be. Okay? And Rav Tzvi Yudah here in source number 19, I'm just going to summarize it as we're running out of time. Rav Tzvi Yudah also felt that you can't change the fasts, you can't nullify the fasts. He felt that you can celebrate on the one hand, and I think this is something that many feel today. He felt that, you know, you can both fast and mourn for the Churban and for the Galut, and at the same time see and recognize the light of salvation shining forth in our day. That was Rav Tzvi Yudah's approach and the approach of many. I put a passage from a tshuva of Rav Yaakov Ariel here in source number 20, who also feels that, you know, in order to make any changes, you'd need an authoritative Beit Din over Am Yisrael, you'd need a Sanhedrin, you'd need true peace, as the Nevuah in Zechariah ends with Emet and Shalom, you need a true peace. He says, we don't have any of that. And so he too believes we can't change Tisha B'Av, we can't nullify Tisha B'Av or the other fasts as well. Just end with a passage from the Rav Soloveitchik, something that he said over in a lecture in 1968, where he grapples with this question of Tisha B'Av in light of the miracle of the modern state of Israel. This is a lecture that was transcribed and put on the Yeshiva Haritzion website. If anyone's interested, I can give you the link to see the entire drasha. It's a really beautiful drasha that was translated and adapted for the Haritzion website. And he writes the following. And again, he's grappling with this question of Tisha B'Av and the other fasts in light of the miracle of the modern state of Israel. He writes, does Yom Ha'atzmaut answer the question of Eicha? Only fools can think so. Arrogant fools. And there are many fools of that sort. Meaning, he believes that Yom Ha'atzmaut is an incredible, monumental watershed moment, but there's still the question of Eicha that remains. Can a Jewish government or military success be considered a substitute for all the suffering and killing of the years of Israel's exile? It is forbidden to say that this is the recompense for 6 million Jews who were slaughtered. This is an expression of cruelty and a total lack of sensitivity. You know, Rav Soloveitchik was very balanced, even in his approach to religious Zionism. Does the rejoicing of the Six-Day War answer all the questions that arose in the period that preceded it? Are we not as puzzled and confused as we had been before it? Did this triumph lessen our sorrow and calm our spirits? Did it resolve our problems and doubts? It is not incumbent upon us to repeat, as did Yirmiyahu, the question of Eicha. As long as God's will is as obscure as it was during the dark night of the hiding of his face, Hester Panim, as long as historical events have not been clarified from a comprehensive and true perspective. As long as the world mocks us because of our faith in a merciful and gracious God, as long as the mystery of Eicha has not found a solution, it is forbidden to abandon Tisha B'Av, the Rav says. As long as a Jew asks Eicha, one must continue to fast on Tisha B'Av. Only after we succeed in deciphering the mystery of Eicha will we be able to abandon the fast of the fifth month. So for Rav Soloveitchik, Tisha B'Av is a day when we mourn, of course, all the calamities and tragedies throughout Jewish history. The day itself, along with Eicha, charges us with making sense of our national suffering. And until we understand the root of our suffering, Tisha B'Av is still very relevant, according to Rav Soloveitchik. Again, as Rav Tzuda HaKohen Cook believed, one may fast and mourn for the destruction of the temple and the exile, and at the same time see and recognize the light of salvation that shines forth in our day. In the Tfilah L'Shlom HaMedina, which we saw how Rav Chaim David Alevi in his Tshuva invokes that expression, we call this young country, this nascent nation, a Reshit Tzmichat Gulatenu. We refer to it as the first flowering of redemption. We don't say that it's the final redemption. We don't even say that it's the beginning of redemption. We say that it's Reshit Tzmichat Gulatenu. It's the first flowering. It's just the beginning. It's just a tip-tipa. We recognize that it's not yet the complete redemption, but it's the beginning of an ongoing process that's unfolding before our very eyes. We recognize just how far we have come, but also how far we still are. And I think that's something that we can all think about on Tisha B'Av. May we indeed merit to mourn properly while it's still relevant to mourn, but may we also merit to see the fulfillment of the Nevuah of Zechariah and to see all of these fasts, Tisha B'Av, together with the other three fasts, transformed before our eyes into days of Sason and Simcha ulamoadim tovim, days of rejoicing and celebrating and feasting and festivals for the house of Israel. Have a wonderful day. See you all in Mitzvah Hashem next Wednesday.